issue of gender equality and women's rights has always been of concern to me, and often I have chosen to shine the light on realities and problems that millions of women and girls find themselves embroiled in simply because of their sex. Domestic abuse was an especially difficult and painful issue to talk about because, too often, it's just too close to home. Equally painful, although much more remote, is the issue of child soldiers, and more specifically, of girl child soldiers, of which, I discovered, there are hundreds and thousands in the world today. Yes, although the use of children as soldiers has been universally condemned as abhorrent and unacceptable, over the last 10 years, hundreds of thousands of children have fought and died in conflicts around the world, one third of them girls.
Really, really difficult to document the number of child soldiers for obvious reasons.
Victoria Forbes Adam works with the Coalition to Stop the Use of Child Soldiers.
Namely that, you know, if you're in the throes of a difficult civil conflict, there may be many different armed groups recruiting and using children, and armed forces illegally using children, and none of those commanders necessarily want to reveal to human rights organisations or indeed to the UN how many children are in their ranks. So that is really, really difficult. And are the best sort of estimates that we have are when the UN goes in the context of a peacekeeping operation and sets up a demobilization program, because then they can register the children that come through the process. So when we published our last global report, which was at the end of 2004, we estimated that there could have been at that time up to 100,000 children involved in armed forces and groups in Africa. But it was really virtually impossible to estimate beyond Africa. In Asia, for example, we know there are child soldiers in Sri Lanka, and in fact, recruitment is on the increase. We know there are children involved in the conflict in Nepal. We know that there may be up to 11,000 children involved in the armed conflict in Colombia, in Latin America. But there are other countries like, for example, the Philippines, where we just have no idea, even though we know that there are two or three groups who are recruiting children. So putting an estimate is extremely difficult. The UN has recently said 250,000. But, you know, I think this is really has to be understood as an estimated figure.
Of those figures, however, Victoria confirmed that one third of all child soldiers are in fact girls. And whilst being involved in armed conflict is a horrific and damaging predicament for any child, girls are subjected to particular abuse and suffering. Victoria, why recruit girls? What are they used for?
There are two things, or even three, actually. One is for the same reasons that boys are recruited. You know, they're pliable, they're easy to manipulate, they're cheap, they can be bossed around, told what to do, they can be easily disciplined. They are useful for providing, as is often the case with children, boys and girls, they can provide logistical support, so maybe carrying and fetching, carrying out sort of cooking and other chores of that ilk. But the additional issue with girls, as I'm sure many of your listeners can imagine, is that very often they're sexually exploited. So they're taken as wives, in inverted commas. They're taken to be sexual slaves of male commanders. So girls have this kind of additional enormous violation of their human rights, if you like, and their rights as children. And obviously the consequences of that are very grave, because they may suffer very serious physical disability as a result. Many of them, for example, become HIV positive. So the situation and the plight of girls is very difficult.
How young can they be when they're recruited?
Well, it really varies a lot. The majority of the world's child soldiers are adolescents. So, you know, they're between the ages of kind of 12 and 17. And, you know, many of those young people actually volunteer. Volunteer, again, one needs to qualify that. Volunteer because they have no choice, because they're living a life of poverty. They don't have access to education or employment, or because they're conscious of you know, human rights violations being inflicted on their families and communities. So there are lots of reasons why children choose, in quotes, to join up. However, in some intensely violent conflicts, younger children have been recruited down to the age of 7 even. But I think I would like to emphasize that this is, you know, not the case for every conflict.
And those who don't choose, in inverted commas, Victoria said, are often forcibly abducted from their homes, many of whom never to return. Now, when girls in particular are freed or the war is over or an organisation goes in and takes them away from being a soldier, what kind of fate do they encounter? I know that often for cultural reasons it's not easy for them to be reintegrated into their communities.
Yes, I mean, that's a huge issue, and that's particularly an issue for girls because paradoxically and awfully, in a way, girls who have been subjected to sexual slavery or who have been raped are often then sort of face a double rejection by their communities and families when they return home. And there's a huge stigma attached to that, and their communities reject them. So that is a huge difficulty, and that's something that, you know, many of the member organizations of the coalition, like Save the Children, are struggling to address. And we've come to understand, working in this field, that there needs to be significant work with communities to get them on board, to mobilize them, to get them to reflect upon what it means to be a girl soldier in order that they can begin a process of reconciliation and healing.
Victoria, does a child that undergoes such an ordeal ever come through?
That's an interesting and complex question, and obviously there's a lot of discussion and inquiry around that issue. It seems to be the case that young people who've kind of, as it were, volunteered or had some kind of motivation for joining up, and if they're not subjected to extreme forms of violence, if they can be got out of the conflict, if they can be returned to conditions of relative normality and security, and again, I stress security, and if they can be provided with support and assistance, perhaps to return to education, to reintegrate with their communities and so on, it seems to be the case that many of those children can actually be okay and develop and grow up to lead a productive and reasonably okay life. However, obviously, as in any, you know, segment of the population, there will be children who really suffer trauma and distress, and some children are subjected to very extreme forms of violence, either having them being subjected to violence themselves, like beatings or torture, or being forced to commit acts of violence against other civilians, so, for example, to torture or kill somebody. Now, that is obviously very, very serious, and for some of those children, recovery may never be complete.
And reading the Coalition to Stop the Use of Child Soldiers website, I came across some of the stories Victoria is referring to, like that of the 15-year-old Ugandan girl who saw a boy being hacked to death for not raising the alarm when a friend ran away, and was herself forced to kill a friend who tried to escape. She was then beaten when she dropped a water container, ran for cover under gunfire, and received 35 days of military training before being sent to fight the government army. My next question sounded hollow. You were just mentioning briefly before, there are programs on the ground to help reintegration. How do these programs work, and are they bearing fruit?
There's a huge array of different kinds of programs. I mean, some programs are kind of embedded within broader development aid programs. So, you know, there may be training, vocational training, let's say, which may be for a number of different groups of children within a community, and former child soldiers may get involved in that. So that may be one way of them reintegrating. Other ways are perhaps through more psychosocial programs, which might be aimed towards getting the children to kind of perhaps reflect a little bit on their experiences, perhaps engage in a process of reflection with their communities and try and face up to it and kind of resolve it and perhaps be cleansed, is sometimes the term that's used, so that forgiveness, mutual forgiveness can occur and the community can kind of go back to functioning in a post-conflict situation. As to whether they're bearing fruit, yes, I think they do bear fruit when they're adequately funded and well designed, and that is not always the case. I mean, at the end of a conflict, very often there is a kind of donor fatigue, and perhaps funders and UN agencies withdraw from the scene, and some of these children are left without the sufficient long-term support that really they need in order to kind of complete their recovery and re-engage with society, if you like. So I think sustained funding and careful thinking is required in the long term if these are really going to work out. Now, that being said, it is also the case that in many of these countries, like, for example, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, there are huge challenges afflicting the nation, you know, very severe poverty, lack of infrastructure, problems with governance, problems of law enforcement. So at times, the problems that face former child soldiers are the same as those which face the broader population, and they won't be overcome in a short period of time.
So much pain. It's children we're talking about. Children with no childhoods and probably no future. On a very personal level, I asked Victoria how she got involved. She told me she's been working in human rights for about 20 years now, so it's always been part of her daily existence to be confronted with violence and to deal with it in one way or another.
From a personal level, I got interested in the situation of children when I was working in Haiti in the UN Human Rights Mission there. And it became clear that, you know, the rights of children weren't well protected. And we were finding children in the prisons, perhaps not even being charged with a recognizable criminal offense, being left there, not being taken to court. There were no facilities for them. There was no recourse. There was nothing protect these children. There weren't any social services either. So I kind of had begun to document that, and obviously I was working in and out of the prison trying to get children released and so on. And then I came back to the UK actually because I had a child of my own and this job presented itself.
Victoria's commitment to protect children from violence, exploitation and abuse can make the difference between life and death for hundreds, maybe thousands, of little ones out there caught in the throes of adult madness. But for so many, whom we never even hear of, yet another conflict in a faraway land can mean another lost childhood, another tragic predicament for another little girl or another little boy brandishing a gun or having to submit to the whims and fancies of men without morals.